Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Franchise Essentials Show, Franchising and Social Media at its Best. I'm Paul Segreto. I will be one of the co-hosts today, along with my special co-host, Ginny Dietrich. Ginny, welcome.
Is that special as in there's something wrong with me, or?
Well, I don't know. The way I've heard you've been riding your bike lately, I mean, you'll have to tell me that.
Yeah, I keep forgetting things, and Diane said to me the other day, you may have hit your head a little too hard.
I know. I can't believe falling off a bike and cracking a helmet. I mean, I'm thankful that it did its job, but you had to hit that real hard.
I hit it pretty hard.
So did it knock any sense into you? Are you easier to work with this week?
No, I think I'm kind of grouchy and forgetful.
Well, thanks for joining us this week as our special guest co-host, Joel Labava, my regular guest host. I wouldn't call Joel normal.
No, he's definitely regular. Not normal.
As we know, Joel is the franchise king, and as I said, he's our regular co-host on the show, and he's wandering around the country on vacation with the family.
Nice.
Ginny is, in case any of my listeners don't know, and I wouldn't know why they wouldn't because I've mentioned your name in the last five shows, Ginny is the CEO of Armin Dietrich, a boutique PR and communications firm in Chicago. And I'll say it one last time, Ginny, Chicago is in Illinois. I know a lot of people don't know that or don't seem to know that on other radio shows.
Yes, Chicago is in Illinois.
Right. Well, today Ginny and I will be discussing franchising and social media. I'm sure we'll add a few sarcastic comments back and forth because I know we have never been known not to.
Right.
And we certainly don't hold back. So I'm hoping together today will be a fine experience. As the summer months come to a close, I guess we got about another month here in hot weather Texas of summer. I know in Chicago you're probably right around the corner for snow.
Oh, don't say that.
Well, I know, having lived up in Chicago for a while, I remember being there at the end of September and there being frost on the pumpkin. I couldn't believe it.
Well, we're hoping that because the summer has been so cool that we're actually going into summer right now.
Wishful thinking.
Right.
Wishful thinking. I like that. I guess you did hit your head pretty hard. Well, as the summer months, as the summer doldrums sit in, it's difficult finding much to talk about in the franchise blog world, so I'll just make a couple of announcements for our listeners. Please don't forget Made Brigade's $1.5 million veteran franchise giveaway. They will be awarding franchises to veterans, and the final announcements will be on Veterans Day itself. I believe that's in November, somewhere around November 11th. Check my blog at fmdpro.com for more details on the right-hand column. Second announcement I'd like to make is reminding everybody to join Franchise Executives Social Network at www.franchiseexecutives.com. You know, talking about, you know, different franchise groups and so forth, I spend a lot of time, as everybody knows, on LinkedIn and within the franchise groups. And I know I've seen you post a few things here and there, Ginny, on it. I only find really five franchise groups that I think are worth their salt. I think there's a lot of redundancy in there. And, you know, a couple of months back, I actually terminated two of my groups, the only two groups that I had. Now I'm managing a group for somebody and trying to get a little bit of synergy going. What's your how come you don't post as much on LinkedIn in the franchise groups, having franchise clients and working with the franchise industry? Do you have any thoughts on that?
You're going to probably smack me upside the head when I admit this out loud, but I belong to so many of them, and there's not an easy way to post without going into each one of them, but I just don't do it.
I think personally, I think LinkedIn is missing the boat because I think it's a wonderful social network, but I think it's missing the boat not being able to use, you know, similar type tools that other platforms have.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what you're alluding to. There is no easy way. And I guess, you know, that's the reason why there's not as much participation on there. And I really think there should be. And so I'm going to shout out to all you franchise execs out there and get involved and make a little vow to participate more in the franchise groups. We have franchise executives. That's the group that I manage, and it's now affiliated with the franchise executives social network, and we're closing in on 1,000 members. It's funny, we started, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago with 80 or 90 members, and we've really seen it grow. Then there's Brett Newman's group over at Franchise Professionals, and Brett is with Franchise Opportunities Network, and he does a pretty good job of keeping his content fresh. Then there's the Franchise Networking Group, and that's by far the largest franchise group, and it's basically an extension of a franchise development company brand expansion out of the Arizona area. And then, of course, there's the IFA group, which has really seen an increase in membership. And, you know, quite frankly, as the industry's trade association, I wouldn't expect anything less and really wish there was several thousand in there, but they're just over 1,000, which is really a little disappointing, but they are making progress. And, of course, there's one more group, which is the Franchise World Network. There's the Franchise Sales Group, which is a pretty good group. I wish they would spend a little bit more time and effort actually talking about franchise sales, though, and not just things in general. Anyway, as I said, I believe there's a great deal of redundancy there. There's too many franchise groups. LinkedIn's missing an opportunity, and I'd like to encourage everybody to try to kick it in a butt and make it happen. Now, I know, Jenny, you have a blog.
I do.
I know you probably have several, but the one that I'm referring to is Spin Sucks, Fight Against Destructive Spin. What was your inspiration for that?
You know, it started out, more than 3 years ago, because we really believe that if we're going to recommend that clients do something, that we've tried it out first ourselves. And so I have a pretty vehement opinion on our industry. And, you know, a lot of people have the perception that we're spin doctors and that we go out and lie or spin the truth in order to get our clients published. And, in fact, that's just not the case. There are people that do that, but the majority of our profession is pretty strategic and bottom line driven versus the thought that any ink is good ink. So as most people know, I have this kind of not joking terminology that I use, that I am seeking global domination. And as part of that, I really want to change the perception of the PR industry. So we started at that, and initially we really looked at things that were happening within the industry that was spin. That was astroturfing. Astroturfing is when you create fake news in order to get clients published. Or there was an example probably about a year ago where a PR firm had written a letter to the editor and signed it as a constituent in a city. And, in fact, when the reporter called to confirm some facts in the letter, the man said he hadn't written it, and it actually had come from a PR firm. And so that's astroturfing. So we started out by using examples like that to say, you know, this is not right and it's not honest, and as an industry, we really need to step up to the ethics. This year, though, as we've gotten more into social media and really talking about how social media is about relationships, and PR is about relationships. It always has been about relationships with reporters, relationships with customers, relationships with influencers in order to help companies grow their businesses. And social media allows us another way to create relationships. And so, obviously, for obvious reasons, I believe that social media belongs in the communications realm as well as in the development and recruiting realms. We've really pushed to see what kinds of things will create thought leadership for us as a business. And what I've found is I took over writing the blog myself at the 1st of June. And so what I found, I started testing. If I write about social media, what kind of response do we get there? If I write about the PR industry and this fight against destructive spin, what kind of response do we get there? Or if I write about what it's like to start a business from scratch and build it and continue to grow even through a down economy, what kind of response we get there? And it turns out that people really, which blows my mind, are interested in learning what it's like for me as a woman entrepreneur to grow a business. So that's really where I'm focusing the blog now, even though the title is still The Fight Against Destructive Spin. I'm really refocusing the effort on leadership and, you know, being really a really transparent CEO.
That's pretty interesting. You know, I often read your blog. Although I always seem to be responding later than so many. I always seem to be number 15 or number 18 or something like that, and I wonder how fast people jump on it, and I think a big part of that is because you do have some exciting material. I noticed just today you wrote a blog, Glass Ceilings for Women Entrepreneurs, and that was a pretty interesting article about Charles Armand. Would you care to explain a little bit about that?
I tell the story on the blog because I was having coffee with a friend, and he said, have you ever written that story? And I said, no. And he said, you should. And I said, well, I have to write a blog today anyway, so I'll do it today. But in the beginning of the business, which it'll be 5 years in April, I would go to meetings, and please don't take offense to this, Paul, but it was always men who would say, so when do we get to meet your husband? And at first I thought, well, isn't this nice? You know, they want to if we start working together, they want to socialize with me and my husband. But then as I write in the blog, the fatal day happened, and I'll never forget this as long as I live. These men walked into our conference room, and they were dressed to the nines, very expensive suits. You know, one of the gentlemen put his Halliburton briefcase, metal briefcase, on the conference room table, and he opened it up, and I was a little bit intimidated because of, you know, the expensive suits and the expensive briefcase and the expensive watches and, you know, the accessories and everything. And we had a really good meeting, and toward the end of the meeting they said, okay, well, when do we get to meet your husband? And I said, I'm sorry, why would you get to meet my husband? And they said, well, he's a principal here, and we don't do business with companies where we don't meet the principals. And I have a especially back then, I have a pretty short temper. I've learned how to be a little more patient as of late and not let my temper get the best of me. But at the time, I really let my temper get the best of me, and I showed them the door. But what as I told people about this, they said, you know, you should create an identity, kind of like Remington Steele, for somebody. And so my friend Harry came up with the name Charles Arment, and we actually wrote a bio for him, and we had him on the website and everything. What it really did for me is that, you know, I mean, I used it in order to negotiate better pricing, or if a prospective client said, well, we really want these things, then I would excuse myself and call Charles to see what he thought, and I sort of used that to kind of kick it upstairs and say, make him the bad guy instead of making me the bad guy. But it really gave me the confidence, especially as a young business owner, to negotiate and to be able to do that without feeling like I was the bad guy. So we actually, I think he died 2 years ago, but we had a fun little internal brainstorm and had a contest to see who could write the best obituary, and then we actually posted that on the website. So
he's really no longer with us. That's funny. You know, what's weird about this is that here your blog is Fight Against Destructive Spin and about spin, and this a lot of people could look at as your way of spinning something that wasn't exactly the truth, but I want to defend you in this because you and I have never talked about this before, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I want to defend you in this because, you know, you're going to have people out there that say, well, that's not exactly honest.
And
I want to ask how many people out there that have set up email addresses and voicemail, you know, press 1 for the sales department, 2 for the accounting department, 3 for, you know, bookkeeping, 4 for development. And it's all the same person. It's a one-man operation. So, you know, a lot of people have done something along those lines. So I just want to stop the naysayers out there before they raise their ugly hands and say, you know, that's not everybody does it to some way, fashion, or form to make their life easier. You know, I had, again, we've never spoken about this, and I didn't know his name was Charles. And I know I've had a couple of conversations with people and said, you know, I don't know who Arment is. And I never asked you that. And I always had this perception that Arment was this 60-year-old plus white-haired man with Johnson & Murphy shoes and would probably wear some seersucker suits in the summertime.
Oh, yeah.
Big conservative suits in the wintertime. And I had this perception that maybe Mr. Arment had this PR communications firm and was on the tail end of his career, happens to find this young, energetic female entrepreneur that he joins forces with, and thus Arment Dietrich was born.
If that were the truth, it would be funny, but the truth is it's Arment is my maiden name, and
okay.
I was a little bit older when I got married, and everybody in my entire career knew me as Jenny Arment. And so as I was trying to decide what to name the company, I looked around at all the global PR firms, which is what we strive to be, and they all have two names. So I figured that was a good way to do it.
Interesting. Very creative. You know, I can, you know, you apologized. You said no offense, you know, when you mentioned about men, because I'm a man, but I think you know my position about women in the workforce.
Yes, I do.
And I believe there's I'm not going to be condescending and say there's a place. There's I think the business world benefits a great deal by women in business. And to me, it's, you know, whoever is the best and the most talented and the smartest and the most perceptive, and they're the ones that should be doing the job that they're hired for. And there should never be any type of, you know, pre-meditated or pre-perceived or anything like that, that it should be a man over a woman. You know, it's funny you mentioned that story about the two men in the expensive suits, because recently I was at the Computer Explorer's tweet-up. Got to see you on Skype as best we could.
Yes.
And that was a fun experience. Deb Evans put on a very nice event for that week. But I happened to meet Karen Marshall. Have you ever met Karen?
I haven't. I've heard lots about her, but I've never met her.
Let me tell you something. I was just, I think, and I apologize to everybody else at the tweet up, I probably spent most of my time talking with Karen. And for people that don't know, Karen is one of the co-founders of Computer Explorers back originally as Computer Tots. And we were talking about females and female entrepreneurs and female executives and how there need to be more of them in the workplace because of the abilities and the capabilities and everything that goes along with it. And she was telling me a story that was very similar to your story, in that when her and her partner originally went for a business loan, and this was after being in business for 3 years and having some decent financials and having good credit, that the banker, after several meetings and after reviewing the documents, told Karen and her partner, fine, the loan is approved. All you need to do is bring your husbands in to co-sign.
Uh-huh.
And she's a little feisty, and she said, well, why? And they said, well, you know, we just need your husbands to co-sign. I mean, that's the way we do business. And I think she said something along the lines of they went to, I don't know, 22 different banks before they actually got a bank to do it on their merits.
Oh, my word.
Husband. Isn't that terrible?
That's terrible.
Well, which brings me to, and I didn't know you were attracting Neanderthal men. because you wrote a blog about is it true behind every successful woman is a man, and I've got to read this, and I mentioned it. I know you haven't had a chance to listen to last week's show, but I mentioned it last week as well. But I'm gonna mention it again because you're on, and I just want to get your blood boiling a little bit. He writes, "Not an issue for me since I believe women do not belong in the workplace, but at home tending to the children and the husband. Much of what is wrong with our society today is because of women's liberation, a product of liberal socialist thinking, and the idea that women can have it all, family and career. Well, they can't. Just look at the divorce rates," and he goes on and blames, you know, drug addiction and everything under the sun to women being in the workforce. I am flabbergasted by his remarks and his position and comments, and I'm sure you were steaming when you read that. And I could imagine that no matter what you were doing, you had a blog article in mind, running through your mind, ready to put down on paper. And I think it would have been comical to be sitting next to you when you read that.
That was a comment on the USA Today article, and I started reading the comments first because I do that to see if there's anything that nobody has already said that I could add value to, especially with, you know, USA Today or Business Week, where they get quite a few reader comments. I don't have anything new or valuable to add to the conversation, I typically don't. So I started reading the comments, and I just got fired up. And, you know, my friends always say that they love it when I get on my soapbox, because you can always tell I'm pretty passionate and pretty fired up about something. And that one just, in this day and age, astounded me. It astounds me that people, first of all, even believe that, and secondly, would say it out loud. It's astounding to me.
I can't believe it at all. And it's been an uphill battle for women, and it shouldn't be. And I wrote about that. And, you know, I admire men that have recognized talent for what it is. And as I said, you know, have hired and mentored individuals based on their skills, talent, and drive instead of cleavage.
Yeah. It's I'm getting all fired up about it all over again.
Well, you know, it really is a shame. All joking aside, it's an issue. It's a serious issue, and it's a little ridiculous. You know, 90% of my franchise clients, my contract clients, are women, either women founders of franchise companies or are, you know, senior-level franchise executives, 90%. And it just makes me think, why do women get it regarding social media and men don't? I often said, and I think you and I have discussed it, I've often related to being akin to men don't like to ask for directions when they're lost driving.
Right. But I also think that social media is a very relationship-based technology, and men are not as good at relationships as women are. So it's easier for us to do it.
Without a doubt. But here's a funny twist that I'm going to put on there. A few weeks back, you and I were discussing PayPal, and you came up with a thought and said, wow, I'm going to, you know, do once a week, and I'm going to have anybody that wants to call in and, you know, talk with Ginny for $1 an hour. And you said, that's fine, Paul. If you want to run with it, feel free to run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I did. And I, too, was a little bit overwhelmed at times of people, you know, taking advantage of my time and looking for free information. And I put out there $1 a minute. Social media marketing coaching. And I got a lot of response. I would say half the response I got were from people that were inquiring about it that didn't have time or want to at that particular time to actually go through a session. And I had others that did and were real happy. And the average one was probably somewhere around 12 or 14 minutes. And we billed them $12 or $14. And I've talked with them, you know, probably 3 or 4 more times since then. And it's a good way for them to get jump started. But here's the really interesting statistic. Out of about 40 different people that contacted me about the dollar a minute social media marketing coaching program. 90% of those were male.
Were male.
Now, 90% of my contract clients are female, and 90% that were just kicking the tires and being able to get their foot in the door to find out something at a dollar a minute were male.
So they are asking for direction. They're just not doing it.
They don't need consistent direction. Yeah, I almost think that it's – here, let me go back to my analogy of men don't like to ask directions when they're lost.
Right.
Men will rarely stop, roll down the window, you know, say, hey, you know, how do I get so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. A lot of times they won't go into, a gas station or ask directions. But if they have to get gas or they have to stop, they will ask.
They'll ask because they're already there.
Right. So I'm almost thinking that they don't want to come across as being ignorant. Maybe they look at it as being foolish and are afraid or embarrassed to ask the question because it maybe undermines their ego and their bravado. But when the circumstance presents itself that there's that little window of opportunity that makes sense to get involved in, then fine, they'll ask that question.
Huh.
And I agree with you. Social media is perfect. I mean, it's exactly what women have been doing all along. Even down, and don't get me wrong on this, and don't think that I'm stereotyping, but even down to the little functions on Facebook, such as photos and photo albums.
Right, right.
Women were doing that for years and years.
Oh, yeah.
And I know with some of the men clients that I have, and I have them on Facebook, and myself included, those are the areas in social media that I lack. And yet I look at Facebook sites that are driven by women, and there's a ton of pictures and video.
I'm thinking about your Facebook page right now. I think you don't have any photos.
I don't. I have very little.
How'd
you like the picture of Dolce?
I like the picture of Dolce. I love that Dolce is on Twitter as well.
Well, you have Pete the Tapeworm. Why can't I have my dog
but
on Twitter?
I don't do Pete the Tapeworm, which is what makes it funny.
Right. You know, my daughter put our dog in a cutest dog contest online, and I've been out there, promoting it a little bit, and I thought, I do so much in social media, why can't I run with this? And I don't know if you saw the time I set it up, it was about 4 o'clock this morning, I set her up on a Twitter page, and I actually sent out tweets to Kim Kardashian, Ellen DeGeneres, Oprah, Demi Moore, and asked them to follow me, which they are now following Dolce on Twitter, and asked them to vote. And I think there's, 3 or 4 million followers in those groups.
That's funny.
Why not, right?
Yeah, why not is right.
That's what makes social media so interesting and fun. Well, the other day, I know you decided to add flying to your bike ride, your bike, right?
Inspired
you. I could see you laying there, and it, probably instead of rolling around in pain, you started thinking about your emergency succession plan. And I know you you wrote an interesting blog on that. And explain to me some of your thoughts. What were you thinking when, at the point, you didn't know how severe your injury might be?
Well, the first thing I remember is laying on the ground and seeing Andy's face going, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I don't know." but after that, and, of course, I dusted myself off and got back up on my bike because I ride with a bunch of guys, and heaven forbid if I, stop halfway through the ride and take a cab home or something. And I got home, and it was before I got home that I realized, I was hurt pretty badly. With the adrenaline, the endorphins going through your body, you pretty much can tackle anything. So after I got myself cleaned up, I really started to think. I think it was after I called my mom, and my mom said, "What if you hadn't been wearing your helmet?" And she's right. If I hadn't been wearing my helmet, you know, I cracked it almost in half. And if I hadn't been wearing it, I probably, well, not probably, I would not be sitting here right now. I would either not be alive or I would be in a coma probably. And I hit my head that hard. And so that made me kind of freak out a little bit. And the first thought I had was, okay, I'm doing these webinars with Paul, and nobody else at Armin Dietrich is prepared to do that. And then I thought, we have a new business meeting on Wednesday. We have a new business meeting on Thursday. Who, you know, without me there, would they be able to do that? Or would they win the business? And, you know, so my mind starts thinking at a very tactical level, who do I have to do that? And then I started, you know, I'm very introspective. So I said to myself, shame on you that you don't have anybody to back you up on this stuff. And it really, it conjures up a blog post for me because I said, you know, I told you earlier that people really are interested in what it's like to run a business, and that's a matter of life. I mean, here I am, I've got whiplash, I've got bruised ribs, I might have a fractured femur, my entire right side is bruised and mangled, and I don't have anybody here that can back up some of my duties, which means I'm not doing my job. Mm-hmm. If that's the case. So part of me writing the blog post is putting it out there so that I am held accountable, and I don't know if you noticed or not, but I put a date on it. I said, by December 18th, and I chose that date because I take the last 2 weeks of the year off, by December 18th, I will have an emergency plan. But it won't just be an emergency plan that, you know, if something happens, my family takes and says, okay, here's what we're going to do. It's an emergency plan that says, our president is going to do this, our attorney needs to do this, our CFO needs to do this, you know, so that the business continues to run itself if the staff here decides that that's what they want to do. Now, if the staff decides that they don't want to keep it going without me, then that's up to them, but I don't want to make that decision for them, and I certainly don't want my family to have to make that decision. So we're going to start some pretty tough conversations, and I know it's morbid, but some pretty tough conversations internally to see, you know, if something were to happen, who does what and how do you keep the business going without me?
Let me tie this because it is a very interesting topic, and I am very happy that you're okay. A matter of fact, I can't believe you were back up on the bike spinning on, I think you said you were spinning on Sunday and back on the bike on Monday?
No, I took Sunday off. I was pretty.
Oh,
off,
you took Sunday off.
Yeah,
okay.
I was spinning Monday and back on the bike on Tuesday.
Unbelievable, because I know few guys that would have done that. I remember back in high school, I had a knee injury. I played semi-pro ball. I had a few tryouts with a couple of major league teams. Oh, about 60 pounds ago. I had a career-ending knee surgery. And I was trying to work my way back, and I took this friend of mine, and we used to run down, living in New York, we ran down to the National Park, which was a beach, and we'd run on the beach, run on the surf to build our leg muscles up. And I remember running back from the beach, and he said, I can't go anymore. My legs are hurting. And we happened to stop at the corner, and as you know, New York, you have businesses all over the place, and we happened to stop in front of a Burger King. And I said, well, what do you want to do? He said, and he looked around, and this is like 10:30 in the morning. He said, I need a Whopper. And that was it, and that was the end of him running.
Wow.
He took the easy way out. And
wow.
It was interesting. Yep, he had a Whopper with cheese and onion rings and fries. And
wow.
And his justification was, well, you know, I just ran, so.
Right, sure, I get that.
Always justification. But, you know, going back to, you know, this succession plan, and you know, in the franchising world, obviously there's a lot that has to do with training. And I think this is one of the things that franchisors should be doing more of with their franchisees. And should be including this more with their franchisees in their training, because from a franchisor's perspective, what would a franchisor do if this was a franchisee that had this happen to him, and there was no succession plan.
Right.
There was nobody that could open the store or whatever type of franchise it is, whatever his daily responsibilities are. And, you know, I've often said that franchisors need to get back to a lot of the basics and a lot of the things that they think franchisees know, and start teaching it and start this type of planning, and I think the organizations ultimately will be more successful.
Right. I mean, and it's simple things as, does somebody else have the key to the store, or what are the passwords, or what's the security code? I mean, it's simple things like that that aren't even written down somewhere.
Right, and it's the things that, you know, like you said, we had a webinar planned, and, you know, who else can handle your portion of the webinar, or
right,
a meeting, or, you know, it might be that, you know, you have a couple of clients that you've been very, very close to,
right,
and nobody else has any relationship with them. I mean, there's a lot of different things, and I think in the franchise world, I think that is a big, big, big missing component of training and ongoing relationship building with franchisees. You know, one of the things that I do, I think I told you this a couple of weeks ago when we were doing a webinar together, was I have a pending trademark of visionary succession planning.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm sorry, it wasn't you. It was Joel that wasn't aware of it. Visionary succession planning is a lot to do with, as I refer to it, is what would Pop do? And
right,
I say Pop just, you know, it's not stereotyping men against women or anything like that. It's just what I would say, you know, what would Pop do? And it's like I said to you on the blog too, what would Ginny do? And it's the passion and the vision, because all too often when I work with family-owned businesses, Pop is usually very good at having the financial plan in place, having the legal plan in place, and all of that is done, and Junior, who might be equipped with, you know, a Harvard MBA or some advanced degree and has worked, you know, 10 years in corporate America, is the one that's destined to take over the business. And he comes in when Pop is gone, and he has all these great tools and all this great experience that he's garnered, and he has a fabulous education, and he puts a lot of things into motion. They computerize, they do this, that, and the other thing, and everything is great. But when it comes down to absolutely operating the business on the front line, they stop and they realize, you know, what would Pop do? What's the vision? What was the passion behind it? What made the customers continue to come in? And it was all those little things that Pop really never shared,
mm-hmm,
never put down, and never had meetings about. And then over time, the business starts to fall by the wayside. Nobody's happy in the business anymore, and they turn around and sell the business, or it goes out of business. And a lot of it is because they have not taken the time to do exactly what you're doing right now, is looking more at that succession plan from an operations standpoint, but also from a vision and a passion standpoint.
Right. Well, and I see that as my job every day. If I'm not communicating the vision every day, and if I'm not teaching and coaching here the things that I do differently that are attractive to clients, I'm not doing my job. End of story. I can go out and I can make rain and I can help grow the business and I can do all of those things, but if I'm not creating future leaders of this organization, if, first of all, the organization will never outgrow me, which is not part of the global domination plan, and secondly, I just am not doing my job. And that it's taken me a long time to realize that, because you, as human beings, you want to be the smartest person in the room, and even though you surround yourself with smart people, you still want people to go, oh wow, that's really smart, or wow, that was really wise, and you let your ego get in the way sometimes, and that's been a really hard lesson for me to learn, and I think it really came full force on Saturday when I could have killed myself.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you're okay. You're
Thank
working
you.
Way back.
Thank
I'm sure you'll be fine. And the squirrels on the side of the road high-fiving each other like the commercial got their job done. So stop running them over.
I don't like school.
Well, let me ask you a question. You bring up a good point about, smarter people and stuff like that. Would you hire a smarter person than yourself?
Absolutely.
Okay. You know, a lot of people feel threatened by it.
Well, yeah, of course they do. But the way, instead of looking at it as a threat, you really should look at it as you're allowing the business to outgrow you. And if you allow the business to outgrow you, you're going to be successful, they're going to be successful, the business is going to be successful. And you can't, if you don't hire people smarter than you, it'll always be only what you can do.
Exactly. I agree. And I think that's something that, you know, all of this with the succession planning, the vision, the passion, all of that, I mean, really needs to be driven home in the franchise industry because there's a lot of franchisees that are not prepared and a lot of good franchisees that franchisors are dependent upon and vice versa, and they go out of business. Same thing is true from a franchisor's perspective, and the franchisee is dependent upon them, and a key person goes by the wayside, the founder, especially if it's a startup or something like that. Wow, it could really tear apart an organization and tear it down. In addition to the topics that you talk about, and I'm glad at the beginning of the show you talked about the various directions you go with the blog, I know the ones that you're passionate about, but, you know, you do throw in the stuff about social media,
mm-hmm.
about small business, and you recently wrote about getting started in social media and discussed getting started with free tools. And we also talked about tools not being available on LinkedIn. What are some of the favorite tools you have for social media? Because, quite frankly, I've never seen anybody respond as quickly to tweets and Facebook posts as you do. I mean, this morning you said, leave me alone in the middle of writing a blog, and I'm going back and forth with Julio on there, and you turn around immediately, and you're still in the middle of answering. Well, I know you're not, you know, going from, you know, the Facebook screen to this screen to that screen. So, you know, what kind of tools are you doing to keep yourself engaged at all times?
Well, I do keep TweetDeck open all day, and I use Twitter now like I do email. So it's gotten to the point now that if people email me, they don't expect to hear back from me for at least a week because I'm not answering it as quickly as I used to. If people need something from me, they know that they should direct message me on Twitter because I'm using that like email. So if I'm that's the first thing I do in the morning is look at TweetDeck. I look at it at lunch, and I look at it at the end of the day. Then if I'm in meetings and I come out for a break or, like, after we get off the phone here, I'll open it up and scan through it quickly to see if there's anything that I should respond to or if there's anything that can wait until later. And it's just, like, it's just a way that I've learned to manage it just like I did with email when it first came out. I do use the only robot I use is TweetLater, and every night I spend about an hour going through and setting up my tweets for the next day. And I try to keep the 60-40 rule, so 60% of my tweets are industry, business, or leadership information, and 40% of my tweets are our blog, our newsletter, our Facebook fan page, you know, Armin Dietrich stuff. So I
right.
really try to keep it only at 40% or less about us and the rest of it, really to position myself as a thought leader in building a business as a woman entrepreneur. So I really look for that those types of things to put out there. I also tweet and retweet blogs of friends. So I have a friend that always jokes with me that if somebody asks me to retweet a blog for them, I typically will do it. Well, and that's true. I typically will, unless I don't agree with the blog or something like that. But I typically do. It usually will take me a couple of days, though, to do it because I always want to read the blog and comment on it before I send it to my followers so that they're not just reading the blog, but they're also seeing my thoughts on it. I had coffee this morning with Barry Moltz, who's an author and a speaker, and he said how funny it is that the differences in people when you write a book and you ask them to write a quote for the cover, Some of them say, well, can you just give me a list of quotes and I'll choose one? Some of them say, send me the manuscript so I can scan it. And some of them read the whole manuscript and then write their own quote. I'm kind of that latter portion where if somebody asks me to write a quote for their book cover, I'm going to read the book because I don't want my name on something that I haven't read and responded to. And it's the same thing with the blogs. So I really have kind of figured out this scientific way of doing it. And Julio, who you were joking about earlier, he teases me because I say that I only spend an hour a day on Twitter, but it's true. I only spend an hour a day. You think that I'm there more because I've got things set up so that they go out about every half an hour, but I'm not actually on there every half an hour.
Right. And that's the thing that we often preach to companies about social media is that the perception is that you're there all the time. It's not much different than the little furniture company that doesn't have much of a marketing budget, and he knows he needs to be on TV. So he decides to buy 4 spots in a month, only 4 spots, for the evening news. And he buys one for each of the network stations and one for Fox. So he's got 4. And as the news comes on, you click on the TV, and there's his ad.
Yep.
And you click to the next channel, and there's his ad, and so on, till you're through 4 or 5 channels, and he's on at exactly the same time. And the perception is, gee, this guy is everywhere.
Yeah.
He must be spending a fortune on advertising. Ergo, he must be successful.
Successful, yep.
And yet he's not on again for another 30 days. And basically, you've accomplished the same thing because I find it hard to believe that you spend less than an hour a day on Twitter. I find it hard to believe that I spend less than 2 hours a day on Twitter. Because, you know, obviously I'm also managing it for several companies, so I've always got my hands in Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. It's a way of creating a perception of always being there and coming across, whether it be your target audience as a consumer or a franchise candidate or whatever it is. For them to be able to see it coming from a bunch of different directions, so it creates the perception that, you know, they're active, they're engaging, they're participating, they're everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And you find it funny, too, that when you're not on there, when you have been, like if I have my all-day Vistage meeting and I'm not on there, I'll get direct messages saying, are you okay or is everything all right? Because people aren't seeing me out there. So you find that starts to happen is people expect to see you and have a conversation with you every day. Every day they expect that.
Well, I think just recently you and I had a scene. I think that it was from the movie with Drew Barrymore recently. He's Just Not That Into You.
Yeah.
And I get dragged to chick flicks, and I kind of enjoy them. And she said, you know, it's so exhausting. You know, I answered the voicemail and then sent an email,
yeah,
got a response back on MySpace, only call back on FaceSpace, you know. And I think the guy even said to her, oh, a message on MySpace is today's booty call. And I mean, I felt like, you know, you and I a couple of weeks ago, I think I was
we
on.
Did all of them?
Yeah, we were on. Next thing you know, it was an email response. Then it was Twitter, and it was the same conversation. I think you even said, do you want me to send you a message on LinkedIn?
I did.
And it is. At times, it's really a juggling act. And you know what it's really hard to deal with is when you're trying to recreate it a week later.
Yeah.
You know how sometimes you forgot something, you go back, you plug in the name for all the emails from such and such a person, and okay, now I remember it. But God, when you go across 3 or 4 different social media platforms, it's kind of hard to put that back together. Unlike my background, yours is not entirely from, yours is not in the franchise industry, although you are dealing with franchise clients.
Right.
From your perspective, okay, what should franchisors be doing with social media today?
Well, I think 2 things need to happen. It depends on if, and I actually just wrote a column about this for Franchise Times that'll come out in September. But if the franchisees have already embraced social media, then that needs to they the franchisor needs to allow that to continue. And an example of that, especially here in Chicago, is there's a Domino's franchisee who owns 6 franchises here in Chicago, and he's phenomenal on the social networks.
Right.
In all of his restaurants, on all of his collateral, on all the posters, on everything, he has their Facebook and their Twitter accounts so that you know where to find them. He shows up places. You know that you're getting the CEO, the owner. He creates contests. He was telling me that, you know, the parking is has become a really big issue in Chicago, even more than before, because Mayor Daley made it privatized, and now it costs an arm and a leg just to park on the street, where it used to be a quarter every 15 minutes, so $1 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's up to almost $5 an hour, and it's becoming really quite ridiculous. And people are getting parking tickets, and because if you're 1 minute off, they give you a parking ticket. And so he created a contest to say, and he said the first 7 people that bring in their parking tickets get a free large pizza. So he's really driving business for his locations because of the social networks. So he is one that a franchisee that has already embraced it, and I think at the franchisor level, they need to really use him as a case study and launch it, let him train the other franchisees and launch it out that way. He stays within brand guidelines. He's not sort of a loose cannon by any means. So they need to really embrace that and allow him to train other franchisees on how to do that. Now, if franchisees have not embraced it, this is a great time for franchisors to say to their franchisees, let's get out there, let's try this, let's test it out, let's see what works. We have a client that we've actually made some recommendations where they, as new franchisees come on, they are creating the Facebook fan pages for them so that they're all similar, they're all branded and everything. And then they're using ping.fm to send information from the corporate office to all of the Facebook fan pages so that, you know, the corporate information is there. And then the franchisees can localize everything and keep it up and keep it going. And what's really happening is this is Computer Explorers I'm talking about. Their customer is our parents. They're bringing kids into class. And parents, at the type of parent that they are attracting are spectators and critics. So what that means is that they're either just watching what's going on, or they want a way to review and rate classes. So
right.
We've recommended that they actually create a rating system on the franchisees' websites so that parents can do that and allow that connection and engagement at the local level. So if there are franchisees that are already doing it, embrace it. Let them be the trainers. Let them be the ones. Do not police it. Do not try to control it. If the franchisees have not already started it, the franchisor needs to get out there and really develop it and get everybody excited about doing it, because it really is helpful for thought leadership. It's helpful for developing the brand. It's helpful for recruiting new talent. It's helpful for prospecting for new business. And it really creates that brand loyalty. So there's many, many different ways that you can use it in order to build the business.
Yeah, and I think there's actually 2 more ways too, which is it does generate franchise sales interest, and I think more importantly, and I think we'll see the long-term effects of this years from now, I think it will strengthen relationships through the interactivity or the interactive nature of social media and the sharing of information. I think it's going to strengthen the relationships within franchising and hopefully get it to the point that it truly becomes interdependent relationships.
Yeah.
You and I, in conjunction with Franchise Business Review, have the Frantelligence webinar series coming up.
Right.
I know we were scheduled for this month, and we got a lot of response from people that wanted to participate, but because of vacations and stuff, asked us to move it back till September. So I just wanted to announce that September 15th through October 6th is the development track, Social Media Success, How Social Media Can Build Your Franchise. And that's the track that I am directing. And Ginny's track goes from September 17th through October 8th. It's the marketing track, social media success, connecting with your customers using social media. And I know we have it on our blog site at fmdpro.com. You'll be seeing a lot of information from Franchise Business Review, from Armin Dietrich PR, and from Franchise Essentials as well. You know, a lot of people are aware of what happened with Domino's a couple of months ago with the idiots that were playing around with food. You were a little bit close to that, weren't you?
The only reason that I was is because I write that monthly column for Franchise Times, and they asked me to do sort of a expose, I guess, for lack of a better term, on it. The nice thing about it, though, is after I did it, and I did it from a crisis management standpoint, and really
right.
there are two things that Domino's did wrong. They waited too long because they weren't paying, they weren't on social networks to see what was happening, and they found out about it because a customer called almost 2 days later. It was like 36 hours later and said, did you know this is going on? So the crisis had manifested itself really quickly because it was on YouTube, and you know that stuff spreads like wildfire. So if they were listening on the social networks, they would have known that that was happening immediately, and they would have attacked it immediately. The other thing they did wrong is they, from a crisis standpoint, especially with social media, you have to be able to respond immediately on the network that it happens, and they should have gotten their CEO on YouTube within minutes, and that didn't happen. So the nice thing about it is it has created this relationship now that I have with Ray here in Chicago, because he really has come out and said, we're using the social networks, we're really active now, we're listening, we're paying attention. And I think that crisis created that sort of immediacy.
You know, I've been dealing with some new startup companies that are, you know, tipping their toe in the water of social media, and all collectively have indicated a fear of getting involved with social media because of, you know, what happens if a customer, you know, says something negative.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them have said, you know, we don't know if we really want to take the risk. And I know I often say that they're taking a bigger risk by not being transparent and not being out there and not engaging in that conversation to address it immediately, as opposed to it popping around online without their knowledge and them finding out about it, you know, days or weeks later.
Well, yeah. I mean, people say that to me all the time. The fact of the matter is these conversations are already happening. Now you have the ability to listen to them and respond to them. So
right.
Why would you want to ignore that?
Right, and you know what's going on. Sometimes you can see a pattern developing and get in the middle of it.
Right.
You know, as we're talking, you know, it's funny how things have changed, because I know not too long ago you had said that a university wanted you to help in recruiting or setting the standard for someone to head the department for social media, a social media degree or a master's degree,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they wanted 10 years experience.
10 years of experience.
You know, and it's funny how much things have changed just in a year. I mean, you know, a year ago we knew social media was out there, but hardly anybody referred to it as social media.
Yeah.
It was all, you know, social networking and Web 2.0. And now, you know, social networking is just a small part of social media, and there's so many great tools out there and companies, you know, being bought by other companies. I mean, it's really a fascinating time. Real quick, in 15 seconds or less, why does Twitter have a whale as their symbol?
I don't know.
Isn't that, I mean, I don't know, sometimes when I guess because I just see it too often, you know, the whale fail, and it just cracks me up, and it certainly...
I don't know why it is a whale.
I don't know. It certainly makes me remember it. That's for sure, but it really is a strange a strange little mascot.
It is.
Well, Jenny, I really appreciate the time you spent with me today.
My pleasure.
I can't believe the hour went by this fast. I am happy that you're not seriously hurt, and we can learn from that experience and encourage other people to wear your helmet when you're driving around and you see the side of the road. Good luck in everything that you do. Try to keep blood pressure. Somebody ticks you off. Again, till next week, this is Paul Segretto and my host, Ginny Dietrich, for another day on Franchise Essentials, Franchising, and Social Media. Have a good day.